Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome everybody to CMC Radio. I'm your host, Rob May. I hope everyone is having a great Thursday so far. And I'm excited to say that joining me right now is Neil Golden. Neil, how you doing today?
I'm doing very well, Rob. I'm glad to be here.
Great. Well, it's great to have you back as always. For everyone just catching up with this episode and this particular series, we've been discussing a wide variety of different things that have to do with world economics. And the grand scheme of things, Neil came onto the show initially to discuss his ability to read stock charts. Now, for many people, and myself included, I had no idea really what this was or what people like this could do. However, you know, why don't we hear from the person and the man himself. Neil, why don't you explain to everybody who's just catching up with us now as to what stock chart reading actually is.
What it's based on, it's based on something called technical analysis, where you look at a chart and over a period of time you watch how the prices have been moving, and then you draw the conclusion of where you think the prices may be headed in the future. This is one of the basic ways of deciding whether or not a stock at the moment is a good, would be a good investment. And the other traditional method of evaluating your stocks is to look at corporation balance sheets and earnings reports and crunch all the numbers and do it that way. But me, myself, I like to look at pictures. So to make my decisions, other than
sure,
to run a bunch of figures through my head.
Absolutely, yes. And I know
that
there's a lot that obviously goes into it. This is not something that people can really just jump into, right?
No, it takes a while to develop this. It's not done overnight or in a week. But if you stick with it, you will be rewarded over a period of time, as long as you get the proper training. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And the most important thing is don't keep making the same mistake over and over if it's not working.
Sure. And
before we
and Neil,
get started,
real quick.
I just would like to make the usual disclaimer that investing in stocks is an art. It's not a science. Just because something has happened in the past doesn't, no guarantee that it will happen in the future. And the number one rule is never invest with money you can't afford to lose.
Okay. True. And absolutely. And that's actually what I was going to remind you about.
Okay.
And I'm sure people do it all the time, right? I mean, I'm sure people get their hands on a little bit of money. They fall into it. They, you know, they acquire some sort of excess money to play with a little bit, and they think, you know, they got a tip from somebody, or, you know, they think they know something, and then all of a sudden, you know, they're looking down the barrel of losing everything.
Yeah, that's what happens to the majority of people, especially people that come to investing for the first time. They end up losing mainly because their timing is wrong. And
sure.
One of the very first things you have to do is determine where the market is at, which sort of brings me somewhat to today's topic that I wanted to discuss, you know, because
sure,
when you turn on the news and everything, everybody's worried about, you know, basically how low is the market going to go.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what's happening right now and what does it look like in the future? You know, there's always the spin on Wall Street is, you know, any time is a good time to invest, and right now is a great time. But if you fall for that, you'll end up, you know, like 90% to 95% of the investors being losers, because basically you're going up against, you know, mutual funds, pension funds, hedge funds, and everybody out there that has billions of dollars, and you only have a couple of hundred or a couple
right,
thousand. Right.
So you're saying, so just for right now, you're saying this is not a good time to invest.
I would recommend that you keep the money in your pocket and wait, because the outlook for the market, which is totally my opinion.
Sure.
And not of your, is that the market is going lower, and right now the market has gone down to its first level, and right now, at least this is like September, 10th?
Yes.
It seems to be on a bounce. It's going back up. But as you know, the month of September, this is when Congress comes back from their vacation in October. They're faced mm-hmm. with a lot of issues that they're trying to put off the side or not to deal with at all. You know, things like immigration, the budget, the thing with Iran or whatever, and they don't want to deal with that. So, you know, basically they, quote, I'm not going to say they want to get paid for nothing, but that's what happens because
right.
they can't agree on anything.
Now, is there
at
anything,
this point,
is there any particular industry in the market that is safest to invest in if people, you know, are just, they just want, they have this money that's burning a hole in their pocket, and they say, you know what, I really want to take a chance right now. Would you recommend any industry at all?
Right now, I would not recommend anything, but as you know, the price of, you know, oil has been going down,
mm-hmm.
and they're, you know, saying that by the end of the year, price of gasoline could decline a lot, which would give the average American citizen a lot more money to spend.
Sure, yeah.
But at this particular time, like I said, this is the month of September. Historically, it's the worst month of all to be investing, so just hold on to it. I mean, a professional investor would be doing that. I mean, but if you have $1 billion, you know, you can be buying as the market is going down. That's what the
right.
billionaires would be doing at this time, I feel.
Absolutely, sure. And so to get to today's topic, and I know you wanted to discuss the pullback and why
yeah.
this particular pullback is different from previous
pullbacks, right.
Yes.
And I think from now on, which makes this one a little bit different, is that this one is more or less a global pullback. As you know, China is getting blamed for a lot of the downturn in the market, saying
mm-hmm.
that they cannot continue to grow at the rate of 7 or 8% a year, their gross domestic product. So with that in mind, the market is finally reacting to that after, you know, 6 years of going up. That's part of the problem. Other thing is, you know, the European countries right now, they're faced with a lot of, I'd say, immigration problems, same as we
right.
are here.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing about Europe is what I'm told is that there seems to be a lot more older people than there are younger people in Europe. And the older people who are probably around my age, they say they're retiring, which would make it about 2 million people a year. And at the end of the year, there's a deficit of like 1 million jobs that are sitting in Europe that are going unfulfilled, mainly because there aren't people trained to do them, you know. So
right.
As society, even in the United States, we do have some, you know, unemployment problems that are drastically needed. Like, one, you know, we need a lot more people in the United States to take care of the people that are getting older. And, you know, we have more older people than we have younger people. So, you know, they need a lot of things like nurses and doctors. But as far as work goes, at this point, we need a lot of, what do you call it, programmers or people that know how to do coding and stuff like
yeah, sure.
that, and
yeah.
just can't train them fast enough to fill the positions for these things. So at the same time, you know, we have people applying for unemployment that, you know, just can't get motivated to go back to school and get themselves trained for, you know, whatever is needed. That reminds me of a picture they're talking about called the intern. And there's people that, you know, worked for 30 years that are retiring, and now they, you know, get these jobs with the big corporations, you know, just, you know, because of their experience, you know, they're pretty successful. So, somewhat, I don't know. I find it amusing in some ways.
Well, it certainly does tell. It's a sign of the times with what you're saying. Obviously, I mean, you know, this isn't. It's certainly not an easy time to find a job. It's not the easiest time to keep the job. And again, I think it does boil down to what we're qualified for and what people, you know, what they trust is a worthy career choice at this point, you know, because it's very difficult. Obviously, like you mentioned, you know, healthcare is something that is constantly going to be in need of more people.
Yeah, right. As the population in general ages, I don't know how many people are turning 65 every day, but it's around the number of 10,000 people, I believe. That's a lot of people to be, you know, considered to be, you know, senior citizens. So
absolutely.
How do you handle this? How do you take care of them? And, you know, can they afford to quit working with,
right,
you know, what's happening in the economy? So,
but now, in terms of this pullback, this particular pullback now, what do you think needs to be done, or what can be done to kind of get us back on the right track, we'll say?
You know, I don't really have a solution to that. And I honestly have to say I do not know what the answer would be. But, you know, the trend is for young people. I know, you know, that in my generation, I guess, you know, people were, you know, more or less kicked out of the house at the age of 18 and expected to go to work. Well, in a good economy, you can do things like that, but now people aren't getting married, you know, in their early 20s. A lot of them are waiting to at least the age of 30 before they can get married, and it takes that long, you know, when you go to school, and then you get out of school, and, you know, you have to work at Starbucks for a while until something comes along that you feel that you're qualified, that will, you know, afford you to pay off your student loans and that kind of thing. So, you know, there's that situation that a lot of people are just, or young people are living at home a lot longer.
Yep.
But one of the things, you know, before, you know, getting back to the things that we're faced with, a lot of global conditions, you know. As far as the BRIC countries go, let's say Brazil, Russia, India, and China, they are trying to create what I would call a middle class. So with the demand for their products at this point isn't as great as it was in the future. I mean, in the past, you know, they're are trying to keep their economy, you know, at least growing, you know, at this point. But that's also playing a factor in this recession, because now we're connected to them. As I was trying to point out in some of my previous talks, that, you know, recessions aren't really that severe, especially in in the past. You know, there were declines and everything, but they weren't really centered around bank failures, you know. And
okay.
I pointed out the recession of 1929, the banks went broke. They almost went broke again around 2005 to 2008, but we were lucky in the sense that our federal our treasury could always print more money to keep the banks from going broke. And as long as that doesn't happen in this country, I think things will be okay. But, you know, now we're at the point where they're saying these banks are just too big to fail. Mm-hmm. But they're doing everything but, you know, giving loans to people in the middle class to buy, you know, houses and cars and everything. Mm-hmm. One of the last place to do, but, you know, that's the result of them lobbying Congress, you know, for over 20 years to get the laws changed in their favor. And in some ways that's, you know, very scary, because now I'm told that most politically, you know, all the candidates out there, or at least a lot of them, have what they call super PACs, which are nothing more than corporate sponsorships to fund money to candidates that are, you know, running for president.
Right.
And from what I'm being told at this point, Wall Street is the biggest contributor to the people that want to be president. So that's a scary feeling, and especially, you know, when you consider, you know, are corporations people, or are they just entities with the rights and privileges of people? So the conclusion is, you know, these corporations have like billions of dollars,
mm-hmm.
and they're making their presence felt in Congress. When I say this, you know, I would also like to say that I am a capitalist, not a socialist.
Right.
And one of the most famous lines I've ever heard is the one that was given by Karl Marx. When he grew older, he used to walk around and he used to repeatedly say, "I am not a Marxist." Or that, so I'm just saying that I am a capitalist, even though
right.
From time to time I enjoy bashing Wall Street. Especially when it comes to things like the wage gap between those mm-hmm. at the top and those who work for them at the bottom. It's just huge, and it's something that has to be closed.
Of course. Of course.
Yeah.
You know what? It brings me to my next question, everything that you just recently spoke about. With the coming election year upon us, what can people expect for the market?
I can't really go out that far to next November.
Well, typically during an election, we'll say during a presidential election year, though, typically, does the market show signs of improvements, or is it safer to invest for people? Or
well, it depends. They say there's records, you know, showing who wins the Super Bowl, who's going to get elected for president. You know, they've got some things going, you know, along in that vein, too. So, but at this point, you know, because it's like I'm trying to say, this recession, it's a global thing, and right now, you know, the market could be going up. It is going up. It's sort of bouncing back, but the volatility of the market is going to probably force it to go back down, and because the earnings for the projection of the future just aren't there. For
sure.
The, you know, multinational corporations, I do not see them making any huge profits to spur the market
right.
to new heights at this point. That's all I can say. So,
gotcha.
And that's to maybe the end of this year, you know, and starting in January, it'll be a whole different year. But I can give the listeners a little tip. If this being the month of September and Congress can't come up with a new budget, I would advise the listeners to consider investing in gold for a quick profit. I think that's a prediction that I could rely on, because as we all know, we don't want the federal government to shut down in any form or fashion.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so, Neil, with with another issue that you had brought up again during this conversation, how does – I'm curious to know, because I know that we've heard a lot about immigration policies and obviously this surge of trouble with immigration across the globe at this point. How does that affect the global market? How is that a concern for the markets to really worry about?
Well, it takes away, in a sense, from the country, because they're spending a lot of their resources on giving out, the medical care, the food, and the shelter, and the training, to these other people that aren't working, per se, uh-huh. or just looking for a new life.
Right.
In a more peaceful economy, and how that affects them on a negative basis. Like I was just talking about Europe, end up with about 1 million jobs every year that just aren't fulfilled because people aren't properly trained for them. The key to all of this stuff, I'd say, even in the United States, would be to eliminate poverty and welfare. It seems to be education, an investment in their young people. I know in, for instance, in Egypt, there are more young people, especially, well-educated, and just don't have meaningful jobs at all or can't find work. So that creates a lot of turmoil. So, and the biggest thing is that, old people in America, we have representation in Congress. At least we can influence a congressman. But politically speaking, I'd say all over the world, young people have nobody pulling for them politically. And this, I think, is very detrimental because it's always the future of the country. it depends on the young people the most if you're going to continue.
Sure.
And so in that sense, it's sort of one of the more sad things, because like I was saying, Wall Street and the corporations are basically trying to get, their representatives to give them tax breaks.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And, Neil, I know there was somebody that you wanted to give a shout-out to today. I'm very curious to hear this. Mr. Henry Kissinger.
Yes, I have to say, he's one of the more or less great Americans, I feel. And the reason why I'm saying this is because he invented, while being Secretary of State for Richard Nixon, I know he started out in the Kennedy administration, but
uh-huh.
He invented what we call the petrodollar, which means that all oil that is bought from OPEC, and mainly around the world, it has to be paid for in American dollars,
mm-hmm.
which sort of gives strength to the American dollars,
Sure.
And for that, I'd have to give him a shout-out. He's up there, in my opinion, with Alexander Hamilton and some other great Americans who have been very patriotic and loyal to the country. So I'd say right on, Henry. You did a good thing. And deserve to be in the history books.
Absolutely. And I'm curious, Neil, while we're on the topic of this, who else in modern times would you say has played an enormous role in shaping, just the overall history of the U.S., or the face of good you know, politics or good practices. Who else do you kind of say is doing a great job at that?
Well, you know, it's still out, you know. You can't really look at it as doing, well, of course, you know, my favorite personally would be Abraham Lincoln, because he was the right guy at the right time. He wanted to keep the country whole from coast to coast,
right.
And that was his belief. And when he freed the slaves, like, he had no control over them whatsoever.
Right.
It was just one of the most astute political moves I've ever seen. I really can't say that, but in some ways I would really love to shake the hand of Newt Gingrich on a personal basis, because I won't even say why, but I just like to shake hands with that guy for some reasons. You know, what he did and how he outsmarted the average person, like, brings to the saying that you can fool some of the people some of the time, but you can't fool all the people all of the time. So historically, he's about the only other person alive right now that I'd have to say, you know, he's pulled some things off, even though he doesn't exactly believe in him. You know, was he said one thing, and this is the whole thing. You know, most politicians, I think it's true of all, they have their public image, and then they have their private image, and sometimes there's a vast difference between that, what they say and what they really do. So I know I'm avoiding your question, but
that's
I'd say outside of Abraham Lincoln,
sure,
the creator of the Republican Party, none other. You know, that's why I was saying before, these are very interesting times, and there's a lot of things that are playing effect as far as you know, global warming, the environment,
sure,
pollution, and the wage gap is it's very serious at this point. The American middle class is very much in need of being revamped, and you know, and they need something to happen that's in their favor. You know,
absolutely,
because otherwise we'll just be a country of rich, super rich, which would be about, you know, 84 people controlling 90% of the assets.
Right.
And the other one, everybody else in poverty. So don't want to see that happen.
No, certainly not. And Neil, while we're winding down to the last minute and a half of this particular show, glad to say we got you coming back on in 2 weeks, and this is a pretty extended series that we're doing with you, and you know, I want to cover every single topic out there that you're helping people kind of get a glimpse of things that they probably didn't think about. So I appreciate everything that you brought to the show already, but real quick, while we have just over a minute here, what who is the I'm sure you're following the political race, you know, leading up to next year, right?
Somewhat, yeah. Not in depth, but I vaguely know what the front runners are, yeah.
Okay. And I don't want you to necessarily go into depth here, but do you have a candidate that you feel would be better right now? Just now, without following everything crazily. Who are you going for right now?
Oh, okay. Well, I think I already said in this episode that somebody has to do something for the young people of this country, because they are our future. In some ways, that's sort of like a revolutionary idea, but
right.
I think the person that can probably do the most for them, he says he's a socialist, but that would be Bernie Sanders. So I think some
Bernie
of his
Sanders.
Recommendations should be taken into consideration, and especially if the Wall Street investment firms were to cultivate them, because they will be the wage earners in the future. So
perfect. Well, Neil, unfortunately, I'm going to have to cut you off for today's episode. But I want to thank you for coming on today. And, again, we're going to have you back on in 2 weeks at the same time, same day, Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Okay. Good talking to you, Rob. Hope
all
you
right.
Have a good week.
Thank you again, Neil. And from everyone here at CMC Radio, this is Rob May saying we'll see you soon. Take care, everybody.